Welcome. This is Why Life Is. I'm your host, Niles McFlower, and this is your show for metaphysics and spirituality. Today's show, we are going to continue. Actually, this is show number three, dealing with the prehistory of the Atlantean sub-races, which some people might refer to as the lost continent of Atlantis. In last week's show, I thought I was going to get through everything and try to tell you what I could about the subject, although I have spent many more hours talking about this subject than what I'm condensing it into on the air for us this time. But I didn't make it through, which is okay. I don't mind. I'll just keep talking about it and yakking about it. If you would like to join in, you can at 877-876-5227 if you're in the U.S. And if you are in Canada, try 888-815-9756. So let me kind of do a very, very quick summary of where we were at. The main point I'm trying to stress in these shows is that the things I'm talking about are not historical, they aren't archaeological, and they aren't paleontology as it is today, because the evidence to support what I'm saying is going to need to be found probably by doing maybe some lucky DNA searches and finding some artifacts that are very, very difficult to find. The problem is that a thing called de-evolution has progressed and gone on since these Atlantean peoples were around, because they were around a long time ago. I mean, yes, the very last ones were virtually in our time, almost, in terms of historical context. The very last peoples that could be declared to be Atlantean in nature existed, give or take, about 11,500 years ago or so, somewhere in that ballpark. Now, here is the point. In each of the cases when they were around for millions of years before, each subrace reached a point of development and then started to decline. The decline is caused by a change in things called ray energies, which has to do with the way, we'll call it, beings way beyond us in development focus the developmental energy on our world. And they don't do this, all the energies at the same time. They only do, at this particular time, and in the time that Atlantis existed, 4 out of 7. And the 4 energies correspond to 4 out of 7 of our chakras, or centers, which develop our senses in humans. And this is true of all life. So all life is being stimulated to grow a sense more than not if the focus of a ray is on our world at that time. This changes everything, because this quote-unquote metaphysical principle causes evolution to be dynamically changed. It means that instead of there just being one surviving force against another surviving force, or another succumbing force within us or in any living creature, we have another issue, which is a conscious spiritual development of life that can be controlled from sources very far away from Earth. And this allows the changes that we call evolutionary to be somewhat skewed and changed. When a ray changes, if a particular subrace of people happen to have gotten used to, which they do, to the developmental aspects of the race that were in focus, as a ray changes, that race may decline in their sense. And when you lose a sense, you start losing consciousness and many other aspects of your civilization, which can cause that civilization to fall apart and the people themselves to decline. This process is relatively complex, but at the same time, it actually has a simple basis of just changing one ray usually at a time of the 7, and it affects all life in our world. Every kind of life form has changed, so it isn't just that the sub-race of Atlanteans may de-evolve, so does other kinds of life forms, and that's the clue that I've used in determining how and when a lot of this stuff happens and why. And it really helps to pinpoint, because you can use a lot of things happening in the world at the same time. The interesting part about this is that, of course, some people in evolutionary science may say, well, isn't it just a change in the relationship to the Earth's orbit to the sun? Or maybe it's something environmentally this way or that way. Well, that may be true. Even if you wanted to believe that, the point I'm trying to make is that there is a consistency to this de-evolution principle, and that people actually don't just evolve, but they can de-evolve. And it's very, very important, because it can explain a lot more about hominids and earlier parts of Homo species, that's us, human species, that can't at the present time be explained. So, now with that in mind, and I hope that helps, I'm not going to go back and explain all the differences about the subraces, because then we'd have to have five more shows or whatever to do all this. But I wanted to have that idea, that thought, as I continue on in talking about the fifth subrace of the Atlantean race itself. Now, a subrace is a race that corresponds, a subrace is a part of a race that corresponds to the emphasis of the ray energies being changed on the focus of Earth, which changes the focus of the way the senses work in their bodies. And this causes the race to change, the subrace to change. So that's what brought in the fifth subrace, is there was a change where the fifth ray type of energy, which affects the Ajna center and a lot of lower knowledge development, caused the fourth race to become the fifth race. That's basically what happens. And those people who could change and did so without much problem, those people went on to actually evolve into the fifth subrace. But some of them, the people who were mostly, we'll call them more selfish, that couldn't make the change very easily because they were used to using and taking in the energy and using it instead of developing all their senses more evenly by giving it, those people tend to de-evolve. Now, luckily for the fifth subrace, there weren't that many of them. And I can't directly point to, you know, to say that so many of them became de-evolved. I know that I know the Homo species they eventually became, and they were found around 550,000 years ago in the northern parts of Europe, and they were a type of race that inexplicably just appeared. Now, a lot of people think that they might have come from Homo erectus, but they had too many things that were different from Homo erectus, and they were very, very unique in many respects. And they're not discussed much if you follow early man, the development of early man. But that's what they became. The few people, or the relatively smaller number of people that came out of the fifth subrace. Okay, so now let's move on. So during this fifth subrace, we have a problem, and that is that the development of the Ajna Center, since the fifth ray came into focus, caused these people to become a bit egotistical. And in general, although Atlanteans had many problems, they were not necessarily very egotistical because they weren't all that mental. They were more astral in their nature. They thought of things more emotionally. Most people would use the word emotional. I call it astral. And they were either very loving or very emotional in their responses to the world, and they kind of lived that way, as I explained in earlier shows. Go back to the archives and listen to those, and you'll hear what I'm talking about. They were much more defined by how they felt and their creative imagination than how they thought and their structured mental thought. Now, because the Ajna Center was being developed in the specific subrace, they started to develop more of their lower mental thinking and a little bit of their higher mental thinking. Higher deals with concepts, lower deals with just the examples of those concepts. And so the interesting thing about this is that they started to take on characteristics like us, a little bit like us. Yes, we are the fifth overall race, way different from Atlanteans, and we, all of our subraces have generally thought very strongly mentally. Mental thinking includes logic, which has to do with the full use of time And we think about things in terms of mental processes of if A, then B, then C, and we always think of it in some kind of order dealing with time. This gives us the ability to develop full concepts and to restructure our universe based upon conceptual thought rather than just how we feel or how our imagination is. This is very different from the Atlanteans in general, but there's a similarity between us and these fifth subrace Atlanteans because they had so much development of this center, particularly in their astral body, but also a little bit in their mental body, that caused them to start becoming a little bit like us, which unfortunately also produced some of the same problems we have today, which is we're a race that tends to be very egotistical and or arrogant. And so some of these fifth subrace Atlanteans tended to be a bit egotistical and arrogant, meaning they thought they were right, and they thought they were right at the exclusion of really being as loving as they normally might have been in an earlier time. This has some very nasty consequences. One of them is if you give them too much information and too much knowledge, they can turn this into some toxic results. They also turned a little bit more to science than they had in their prior subraces. It says they invented things. So one of the things they invented had to do with the ability to produce power from sources that we would call today almost, I guess the best way to call it would be something like a solid-state device, but that used gravity to make electromagnetic and other types of energy powers that we don't know about in today's world. So in other words, they were able to make a device, I call it a crystal pyramid, that had different layers to it of substances, but it was mostly made out of quartz, but it wasn't fully quartz. It was doped, you might say, with different substances. And these different layers would take these very large pyramids, I mean, talking about the size of a house even, some of them, or bigger, that would take the force of gravity and be able to convert it into another force that could be used to propel things, to move things, etc. This is an amazing invention. And this invention was given to them, maybe not very, we'll say, judiciously, with good judgment, or wisely, by those who were even more advanced and had thought that it would help them to develop their civilization more and be used for purposes of good. Also, the devices were used as communication devices between themselves and also into other dimensions, into the lower dimensions of the astral world. These devices could actually be used to carry thought back and forth, and to carry the ability to communicate in a very relatively limited sense into and back and forth between the astral world. That means people who died from the physical world could actually continue, if they were in one of the lower subworlds of the astral world, to communicate with people here. Well, the problem with that is the people here were getting advice and information from people in a relatively low or selfish part of the astral world. And they thought, they are the spiritual beings running around over there. And so they took this information more to heart than they should have. And they thought it was, quote unquote, very spiritual because it was coming from the other side. And they should listen to it. And they should obey or at least change their opinions on how to live life. One of the things that they were getting from those on the other side is that the way to live life is to get what you can. And after all, life is so hard here and so much easier over there, it's really God's reward to those over there for having lived through the real tough times here. Well, that can create a lot of hedonism and wrong ideas about the nature of who and what they are in living here. Of course, they're souls. They came here as part of their soul to create more of the Creator, but a lot of people thought they were just here as some kind of, you know, like a an ordeal that they had to go through, and eventually, once they've been through it and suffered enough, Then they get the payoff, which is they go to the afterworld and have a great time. Well, that isn't the truth, but it became a kind of accepted idea. And it became a bit of their religion, coming from this misunderstanding from people who live in the more selfish parts of the astral world. And that really hurt the fifth subrace, particularly as it became dominant as thought within their society. Well, that was the seeds. The seeds were sown to produce a lot of darkness and to produce a lot of, unfortunately, we'll say self-focus or selfishness within the Atlantean people. That's not a good thing to have happen. And the invention of this, these devices led to a lot more power, and power among people who are dark is a dangerous thing because it can be used against others. And that's what happened. Wars started to break out about 900,000 years ago. And by 850,000 years ago, these wars were just terrible because they were using some of these devices to actually create destruction on each other. Those that believed what I just told you, and others who said, no, 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 we're really here to create our creator, and you've got it mixed up. So they actually had kind of like almost religious wars, or we'll call them philosophical ones. Very interesting stuff to think about. We're going to be back in a couple of minutes, and I'll tell you a bunch more about Atlantis.
Hi, everyone. Since childhood, I've had questions about my life and life in general that I couldn't find adequate answers to. Questions like, why am I here? Why are others here? Does the universe have a purpose? And how does that relate to my life? More recently, I've been wondering what happens when we die, especially the reasons why. I'm more of a doubter than a believer in many things, and answers that include the whys allow me to think and figure out the truth for myself. I've been reading a book, Life's Hidden Meaning. This one book contains more answers, including the whys, than all other sources I've read or heard. It's amazing to me that every one of my questions has been thoroughly answered. More importantly, I have found that all of these answers so far have checked out to be true. I hope this message helps some of you in your quest for better understanding. The name of this wonderful book is, again, Life's Hidden Meaning by metaphysician Niles McFlower. Some bookstores sell it. I got my copy directly from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com. Life's Hidden Meaning may enlighten your mind and bring some peace and joy to your heart.
Hun, what book are you reading?
It's a novel, kind of, about romance, love, and spiritual life in general.
Kind of a novel? What do you mean?
Well, it's based on some real-life experiences and even real characters. Some of their experiences are fascinating and remarkable. I can't put this book down.
How come the title is Afterlife Love?
That's part of the fascination. This book describes the afterlife in intricate detail and even explains why things are the way they're explained.
But how can anyone write about or know that?
Some of the characters travel out of body to some places that people who've already died also go to. I'm finding it completely believable because it all makes sense and fits into a bigger picture for me.
Hun, what happens to these people?
You can read it for yourself when I'm done if you want.
Better yet, I'll get my own copy so we can discuss it while we read. Let me see. I'll write down the title. It's Afterlife Love by Niles McFlower. McFlower.
Afterlife Love is available in some bookstores and from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com. Or 480-966-3132. That's 480-966-3132.
Would you like to know?
We're back. This is Why Life Is. I'm your host, Niles McFlower. Tonight we're talking about, besides metaphysics and spirituality in general, the prehistory of Atlantis. The parts you probably haven't heard of before, or if you have, you may not have heard the details. So I think that we will continue. Some of you may wonder what was the Homo species that the degenerated fifth subrace became. It's called Heidelberg man, and that particular species you may not have heard of, although it's in the books if you want to look it up. And the Heidelberg man was just usually named after some area of the continent, the European continent, where they found these people. And they were discovered to have been around about 600 to 520,000 years ago or so. They are not descendants from what some people consider to be Homo erectus, because they have qualities and features different, and they developed tools to a much higher level. They had many other qualities which Homo erectus, even 300,000 years ago, the last that could be found of them, had any resemblance to. So they were much more advanced, but they came from a different subrace. That's right. They evolved from a different subrace, the fifth, in this case, of the Atlanteans. That's where they came from. Okay, so let's continue on and talk about what occurred. Well, all of this dissension between, we'll call two sides of Atlantean society, those who thought that the main purpose of life was to have a good time, and that we were just suffering through this part of it so that we could go on to live in the afterworld and be with the relatives over there and become great spiritual people. Those people were actually the ones who were not contributing much to the development of their civilization, except they became more warlike. They wanted to control the society so that they could get what they wanted without having to give as much. Whereas the others wanted to live in a society that was virtuous, that was based more upon doing something creative, of creating more of the creator while alive in this world, and then not worrying so much about what would happen in the next, because they had the suspicion, which was correct, but they couldn't prove it, that the people they were speaking to were only living in parts of the astral world that were relatively darker and not as advanced and not as, we'll say, conscious, loving, as could be, but their devices could not reach any higher. And there's a reason they couldn't, by the way. It had to do with the esoteric realities of that this is the fifth subplane of the etheric physical plane, and these devices were here, they were made here, and they could only reach the fifth subplane of the astral world because of some physics issues. And so because of that, they couldn't reach any higher, and they thought that was all there is. Not surprisingly, in physics today, they don't know anything about the astral world. They think the whole universe is literally the etheric physical part of that universe, and mostly they think it's just the physical. Talk about not getting it, you know. You might say, well, how could they be so far off in that? And the answer is, well, if you go back before 1930, they thought our galaxy was the entire universe. There are 200, give or take, billion galaxies in our universe, and maybe a lot more. So if you think about that, they only missed it by a couple of hundred billion galaxies, and the distance between the galaxies is so great, it's beyond our imagination in comparison to the small size of our own galaxy itself. And that was only, I mean, really, we have to face this, that was only like 66, 67 years ago, and that's where we were at then. So you can see that we're making some progress, but in terms of really understanding what the universe is like, we are pretty far away in terms of hardcore physics as it exists. Not metaphysics now, but physics without metaphysics. Okay, so getting back to our Atlanteans. The Atlanteans that had this knowledge and used it for, we'll say, more militaristic purposes were the selfish ones, and they wanted to control the other people who were not as selfish. And they had, it was sort of like a lively debate that turned into a military, terrible series of military wars in which millions of people were slain, and it took thousands and thousands of years And over that time, Atlantis itself started taking on the characteristics of what was going on, this continent that existed, on its surface, because human thought over long periods of time has an effect on the planet itself. And eventually it became two, we'll call it very large islands, instead of a continent of any size. And part of it just split apart. And the people in the northern part were the more militaristic, the southern part weren't. And they eventually went through these terrible wars, and they tried to resolve them and tried to make peace, and then they fell back into war again. And it just became an endless series of catastrophes. It lasted way over 50,000 years. By 800 BC, ABC, it was a place where almost all of the people, but not all of them, but most of them, that really thought more virtuously were destroyed. The people who were darker, who were selfish, actually won eventually the military conflict. Well, that isn't a good thing, because then, by that point, the race had changed again, and now the sixth sub-race was developing, and this race developed in a period of just abject darkness, and it really was a terrible circumstance. You might say, well, how come that happened? Why didn't good, win over darkness? Well, this is a tough world, and good doesn't always win. And in this case, it didn't do well at all. The sixth subrace of Atlanteans became kind of really wretched people. Now, during the fourth subrace, people lived as long as 140 or more years at a time. Yeah, per incarnated life. That's a long time. In the physical world, that's how long they live. That's a long time. While during the fifth subrace, this dropped down to 100 or so years. But during the sixth subrace, it dropped down to 45 years or so, give or take, maybe 50, as the average life expectancy, because people became darker, their bodies retained more energy because they were so selfish. And retained energy causes the centers to disintegrate over time, the bodies to fall apart, and the result is, unfortunately, illness and disease, and, of course, aging and death. That's what happened to them. And so we have a very bad circumstance, in which case, and this is today's program, it's not going to have a lot of, fun stuff to talk about, because the remainder of the Atlantean civilization just didn't do that well. But I'll tell you what it is as I know it, and it's just the way it is. I don't want to sugarcoat it. I know a lot of people have some fantasies about, it wasn't a great place. And well, there were times, in the Golden Age that I talked about last time, it was a great place. But this was not the Golden Age. All right, so the sixth sub-race, really was a wretched race that had tremendous amounts of illness. The people lived just for almost complete sensual pleasure without concern for almost any, we'll say, virtuous conduct or caring about. They had they liked getting something for nothing, so they had a highly developed gambling system. They gambled everything you can imagine. They had completely legal prostitution throughout their society. And many other things that today we would look at and say, that's kind of like where we're headed, but we're not quite there yet. And it was a very nasty place, very nasty place. They didn't have the respect of family and children and concerns that we today are grappling with. Some of the things that we're moving towards, we're not anywhere near as bad as it was during the Atlantean times, but they are present today in small, relatively small scale. This became widespread. This became the norm of Atlantean civilization. And for hundreds of thousands of years, these six sub-race people did terrible things. They had disrespect for all life, with oftentimes using and abusing all forms of life, including animals. One of the things that came out of the fifth subrace was the ability to alter genetic structure, again, through these same devices that they had developed. And this caused the ability to create kind of a subclass of ape-like creatures that were, you know, it was like the Planet of the Apes. Only thing, of course, the apes in this case, sort of like the sequel, were being abused and used as like slaves. Then in addition to that, they actually created monstrous creatures resembling some of the ancient, by their standards, of course, dinosaurs. But these are more monster-type things. Some of them only existed in the etheric world. Others existed in the etheric, being electromagnetic energy is what they were made of. And then others were actually in physical form. And they used these to do battle with our enemies, whoever they might consider to be enemies. They subjected many peoples, and so that's not a good thing. And they were just a really nasty group of people. Now, they weren't particularly adept at war in terms of being physically capable in comparison to some of the earlier Atlanteans or the next sub-race, but they were very cunning in war and very very destructive. So this was not a good time, to say the least. This went on for hundreds of thousands of years. And eventually, again, the race changed, which is a good thing, I guess. And there was a sub-race, a seventh sub-race. That means that the ray focuses now on the sexual center. It's the seventh ray energy does. It develops the sexual center. And people's senses change, more dominating by one sense over another. And the sixth sub-race actually quickly diminished. And they became what we call today, when they de-evolved, into Neanderthals. Now, that doesn't mean that the Neanderthals were bad people. I don't want you to think that. When a race degenerates, it doesn't necessarily take the things that are negative about their prior developed race with them. As a matter of fact, the whole purpose of it is it's sort of a karmic thing. They're kind of like going through life and developing a more benign element to their civilization or what's left of it. They have very little civilization to develop in comparison to where they were, because their consciousness has lowered in relationship to the destruction of the senses that they used. But as they de-evolve, they don't evolve any further. They just stay stuck there. That's the sign of it. We should be looking for these signs, because we can know what races de-evolved, etc., by just that one factor. So the Neanderthals, which probably developed somewhere around 350,000 years ago or so, came out of the sixth sub-race, and they were the ones who really failed, and they just became part of the European landscape, we might say. They lived mostly in forests in the colder parts, but not the coldest parts of Europe, and were unable to advance themselves beyond a minimal level of development because they had de-evolved from the sixth sub-race of the Atlanteans. And, of course, if we could really find, and this is why I say genetic, some of the very latest tissues, maybe from 30,000 years ago or so, of Neanderthals, those would be the last ones we could ever find, that somehow survived, and we could do a genetic some genetic work on them, it's possible that we may be able to discover markers in these people that are unique and different from us, showing that they were close to they were another species that we can't figure out. And that will be a good giveaway, and I think it will help our scientists to maybe discover something about de-evolution. Our best shot is probably with Neanderthals. So that's a good thing, by the way, if we can do that, because it'll help. It'll bring an anomaly in that will cause people to start thinking about how could this happen. And from that, they may be able to discover what I suggest is what actually happened. Okay, so eventually, the seventh subrace of Atlanteans, the last one, developed, and this is after a couple hundred thousand years ago, they started to develop, and they became the dominant subrace on Atlantis, and they didn't like their preceding subrace of six subrace people, and they actually became antagonistic and violent toward them and would burn them up at the stake or whatever. They would destroy them. So quickly, the Sikh subrace was pushed out and forced to live in wild places, like in the colder elements of Europe. They didn't live there just by chance. They lived there because that was a place where the seven subrace of Atlanteans didn't go out and kill them because they didn't like the cold and they couldn't live there very easily. So they adapted to the cold and they became their own thing living there. And they survived there, which is a good thing. The seventh subrace was much bigger and stronger than the sixth subrace. Their life expectancy wasn't much longer, even though they were physically more, we'll say, robust people. Because they were very selfish, they were even more selfish than the sixth subrace and more violent. They really were nasty folks. And not only did they like all the things that the sixth subrace liked, but they also particularly liked violent actions. They liked to kill. They liked to be part of a more like a warrior type of civilization. And much of what we know of today of peoples that we consider like that, like the Greeks in earlier times, Macedonians, and in later times, the Romans, has to do something like what these seven subrace Atlanteans were, because they started colonies that tens of thousands of years earlier existed in parts of Greece and Rome, not Rome, but Italy and other parts of the world that didn't necessarily completely survive in civilization, but there were still stragglers that survived at the end of the Atlantean epoch. So very interesting that some of our historical stuff has slices, little pieces of Atlantean stuff within it, Atlantean civilization within it. And if you go to some Indian texts, particularly some Hindu texts, you will find mention of Atlantis in some of these texts, which is very interesting in ancient Sanskrit. So it's a fascinating thing that there is some evidence. You got to look for it, you know. And you can find bits and pieces here and there. And you might say, okay, well, what was civilization actually like? Well, the way that the seven subrace lived was, as most Atlanteans preferred, they liked living in stone houses and buildings. And the technology that had been developed by the fifth subrace, which included some limited types of flight, by the way, of heavier-than-air machines, but they used, again, this electromagnetic technology, which is a little complicated to go into in such a brief time as a show. But that technology, as time went by, failed to work because the sixth subrace had very little consciousness and couldn't really fix the machines and couldn't actually even to keep them running. So the point is that by the seventh subrace, these people were living much more primitively than the fifth subrace people were. They were living without some of the technological advancements that were commonplace as much as a million years earlier. So here is a, you know, and a lot of the way that they lived is not too different from ancient cultures in historical times, such as a couple thousand years B.C. We find culture that, in the Macedonian sense, has resemblances to some of the seven subrace Atlanteans. If you go back earlier than that, and the Sumerians, if you look at how they lived, that's like 4,000 B.C., similarly, although they had some written language, the first people to actually have written language of a substantial amount, we find that, interestingly, there are some similarities in their culture as well. And oddly, there's even some stuff in the earliest part of the Egyptian culture that has some resemblances here and there to elements that existed during the seventh subrace of the Atlantean culture. But the Egyptians were more different than they were similar, because they were kind of into their own thing. And they were not part of the Atlanteans. Don't think that they were. They started around less than 5,000 B.C. Atlantis was gone 4,000 or more years before that. Okay. Now, one of the things that the seven sub-race Atlanteans did is they subjected people tremendously to their will, even their quote-unquote colonies that they had started thousands, even tens of thousands of years earlier. They would go and subject for some crazy need or reason, believing in a paranoid fashion that these colonies were plotting against them or whatever. And so there was a constant element of enslavement and subjection of peoples that were even similar but not the same. And the concept of separation became very strong. Evil took over their society. By the middle of the seventh subrace, as much as one out of four people were evil. That's a terrible number, because right today we don't have anywhere near that number of evil people. But it was a huge number for the time, and it had a profound effect on the Atlantean civilization. The continent itself kept submerging, more and more of it was disintegrating. It was made out of basalt for the most part. It was up on very tall areas that grew out of the ocean 16 to 18 million years ago. And these parts were not that substantially strong, and because they didn't have a granite base the way the other continents do, because this was a weird continent being made out of mostly basalt. And it was easily destroyed as the Mid-Atlantic Ridge moved and changed. It opened up, particularly around the Azores, which is where the center of the civilization was. On this relatively, to begin with, large continent, it became just a relatively small island by the end of its existence. So over time, more and more of Atlantis literally sank not only below the level of the ocean, but eventually below the ocean floor. It was submerging back into the earth from which it came. Wow. Now, some people also say, well, maybe a comet came by and hit it. Hey, maybe it did. I don't know. There's lots of ways that you can destroy Atlantis, parts of it, from time to time. And there were lots of inundations, lots of destruction, because as people became darker and more destructive, their own thought brought upon it, brought upon the land that they lived, more and more disasters, natural disasters we call them, but they are disasters nonetheless. Also, they tended to be able to subjugate peoples that lived around what was the original continent. So they tended to be most brutal towards those living in South America and some of the people in Europe. Everybody had a great fear of those that were living on the quote-unquote island continent in comparison to those who were living away from it. The colonies were constantly battling with degenerated Atlanteans. Some of them no longer knew them to be that, of course. And so they just saw them as wild savages running around in Africa, Europe, South America, and even North America. Very strange set of circumstances. Okay, so you might say, well, then what else? How else did these people live? What was their society structured like? Well, the sixth subrace mostly lived for pleasure. The seventh subrace mostly lived for control and dominance, and that was their pleasure. They were big people and brutal people who continued to look for ways of being violent and controlling towards others. That was the big part of their society. We've seen this happen in historic societies as well. And it's not that uncommon. The thing that is uncommon is how evil these people became and still were able to survive for tens of thousands of years in such an evil state. What happened eventually was that the people who were spiritual were told by beings in beyond the human kingdom that Atlantis was going to be wiped out. They were given like a couple thousand year notice of this, so as I guess to give them time to do the following. And that was to eliminate all signs of Atlantean society after the final inundation and destruction was done, so that the knowledge which had created such darkness in the first place wouldn't be found out about for a very long time, if ever. Because it seemed like it all stemmed from knowledge being given unwisely to the fifth subrace, which eventually ended up wrecking them, and then the sixth and the seventh much more so. making the society into a very dark society, which started off being such a wonderful, beautiful society. We have to also understand that even the seven sub-race, with all of their greatness, were not great mental thinkers. They were thinkers mostly. There were a few. They were mostly spiritually disciplined people. But most of the people were, again, dealing with life more from an imagination type of thinking process, and also by living how they felt more than how they thought about existence. And so their society expressed this in terms of how the laws they lived under, the ways they interacted, the kinds of relationships they formed among themselves were always based upon more how they felt than how they thought. This gives them a distinct nature, different from us, even from those that were barbaric among us from, say, Roman times or before that. Those peoples, even as barbaric as they were still more mentally focused. The conceptual understanding of the universe and their world was better than the Atlanteans, especially the seventh sub-race Atlanteans, who really just were capricious in their processing of any information they received through their centers. It was all based on pretty much how they felt. I feel this, I feel that. So you better not meet one of them that didn't feel very good at the moment, because they were pretty violent and nasty people, and they might do terrible things. Okay, so the more spiritually advanced people were told a couple thousand years before it was finally finished that the seven sub-race of Atlanteans were going to be wiped out, and they were given guidelines on how to proceed. They were asked to mystify knowledge. Any knowledge that was going to be kept would have to be only doled out to those who could meet the challenge of demystifying it within their own minds well enough so that they could understand it and not use it for some destructive purpose. This was a safety device that worked pretty good. So they started things called mystery schools, and they also started to hide parts, bits and parts of Atlantean civilization that was off of the continent, in the various colonies, etc. And then, when the disasters finally culminated, their job was for the next 1,000 years or longer to hide every bit they could of Atlantean knowledge, especially anything that could be built upon to become destructive again. So this was a big plan, and they followed this plan. And they knew still most of the knowledge that they were bearing, but over time, the knowledge of what they knew became lost as well. So eventually, if we go thousands of years into the future from the time Atlantis went down, let's say that was 9,000 BC, it could be 9,500, it could be 8,700, I'll just call it 9,000. But when Atlantis went down and there was nothing left of the civilization, within a couple thousand years, most of the knowledge was significantly lost. Even the knowledge that was in the mystery schools was still very difficult to put together in completion. And so major parts of it were gone. And that's unfortunate, and it's one of the reasons that we lost so much time in the development of humanity, is because basically a whole series, seven sub-races of a whole race of humanity are virtually gone. We've, even today, don't know really what the kinds of things they knew. And again, they didn't have a conceptual understanding of it, because that came from higher sources, but at least they had a exemplary way of dealing with the knowledge, so they could build things, make things, do certain things. And a lot of that stuff got lost. It did. A little bit of it came through mystery schools, and some of it helped to develop the various historical civilizations, including the Egyptian, because there was a mystery school in Egypt for sure, called the Second Ray Mystery School, and parts of Persia, and all parts of our world that we're familiar with developed from knowledge that was garnered from these particular sources. And it confounds people today who are scholars, because some of the stuff just seems to spring up from nowhere. If you talk to an Egyptologist, they tell you, well, we don't know exactly where all this stuff came from. The Egyptians gathered it from here or there. But it just does seem like it just sprang up. And yes, some of it may have come from some of the Sumerians and some others. But, you know, the interesting thing about that is that they predate them a little bit. And it's hard to say where the stuff just suddenly comes into being within a very short time. Like less than a century, suddenly people discover things that there was no pre-discoveries to, that normally you would see that sort of development. Well, of course, that came out of the mystery schools. That came from knowledge from the earlier Atlantean period. People had an understanding that Atlantis had existed, probably even going back to 3, 4, 5,000 BC, and then gradually it became just a myth, and most people thought of it more of that than they thought of it as actually being true. Today, I would say that's vastly even more so. So most people think, oh, well, it's just the myth of Atlantis. It couldn't be true because we know that humans didn't exist a million years ago or whatever, so it couldn't be true because we've proven otherwise. Actually, we haven't. That's the point that I'm trying to make in today's show. We haven't proven anything about this. So there's lots of things to consider. Hopefully you'll do some of that. And while you are, I'm going to tell you a couple of things. First of all, for those of you who have a chance, if you're in the Phoenix area, love for you to come by and hear Mimi from the spiritual group I'm a member of talking about understanding evil. And this is going to be on February 18th from 7 to 8:15 p.m. over at Borders Books and Music and Mesa Fiesta Mall. If you're in the Phoenix area, please come and visit us. We'd love for you to do that. And then also on Sunday, February 17th, I'm going to be talking, it's a Sunday, I'm going to be talking about spiritual groups versus cults, a very interesting subject, one that I like to tell people about. If you're anywhere in the Boston, Norfolk, Providence, Rhode Island, anywhere in the eastern side, northeastern part of the country, you can get it on 1170 AM directly. If not, you can get it anywhere in the world at WDISAM.com. Just like you're listening to this show over the Internet, you can listen to that one. It's at 4 to 5 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, or 1 to 2 p.m. if you're on the Pacific Coast and you know how to figure out in between that. Also, if you'd like to get me at any time, you can reach me at whylifeis.com. That's thoughts@whylifeis.com. Just email me. I'll get the message, and I'll either email you back or say something about it on the air or whatever. I hope today's show has given you some things to think about. The most important part, I think, of Atlantean history is the concept of de-evolution and the concept of ray energies. Those are the more complicated sides. I know most people say, well, that's the stuff I don't want to really think about. I like you telling all us about the stories and everything. Okay, if you like that, that's cool too. I don't mind. Whatever you like is fine with me. Just keep listening and tell your friends about the show. Try to get them to listen with you. More listeners are always a good thing. And this is your show about metaphysics and spirituality, so you can also call in anytime you like as well. Well, I'm going to tell you right now, next week I'm going to talk a little bit about politics and some other ideas that I have. I'm reading a book by a person who used to be in Congress called Real Change. I'm trying to think of his name right now. Newt Gingrich is his name. And he's a fairly well-known, somewhat controversial character, but I like the ideas he has in his book. If any of you are reading it, think about it. You can email me or next week listen to the show. I'm going to talk about some of the ideas I have in terms of metaphysics and politics and dealing with the two-party system that we have and how they fit into all that. So we're going to talk about that. I'm going to bring it up, and hopefully you can participate in that as well. And that being the case, until next week and we meet again, this has been Niles McFlower for Why Life Is.